This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today our guest is the Undersecretary for Trade at USDA, Luke Lindberg. It's the 20th anniversary of the Blue Jeans Go Green program, Cotton Incorporated's Andrea Samber.
As you can see, it's been a busy and productive 20 years. I feel personally like it blinked and we're here already in 2026. Fun fact, I'm not sure if the timing of my joining today was intentional or not, but tomorrow is actually the birthday of Blue Jeans. It's not tied specifically to us, Cotton, or the Blue Jeans Go Green program, or Levi Strauss, but rather it's a micro-holiday created because on this date in 1873, Levi Strauss and tailor Jacob Davis were granted a U.S. patent placing copper rivets at stress points on denim work pants. Micro-holidays like these are niche moments and observances that give us a chance to connect with our audience and other audiences.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by the Undersecretary for Trade at USDA, the Honorable Luke Lindberg. Welcome back to the show.
Tony, it's good to be back on. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I'm just kind of wondering, it probably doesn't take you long to hit some big-time frequent flyer miles with the travel schedule that you have, but that's actually a big part of the job, is it not?
Well, the big part of the job is making sure that our agricultural producers, the farmers and ranchers all around the country, are winning on the global playing field. And part of my responsibility is absolutely being their advocate in getting to markets all around the world, opening them up, and getting them wins.
Well, and market access, a primary focus for you. You know, I think in ag, we sit back and we look at big ones like China. When's this thing with China going to happen? What's going to happen with China? But there are so many other markets out there as well and some major victories you've had. Is that safe to assume?
That's exactly right. In fact, when I was getting confirmed as undersecretary, the number one thing I heard from farmers and ranchers all around the country was, we want more market access. And we're giving it to them. The reality is the president has signed 9 new trade agreements, plus 9 framework agreements that are in process to becoming trade agreements. And what that represents is more than 50% of the mouths and more than 50% of the GDP around the world. And how do we know that we're winning in that situation? Well, if you actually look at the trade deficit, you know, we've always had an agricultural trade surplus, which means our farmers and ranchers have sold more overseas than we've imported, which to me means we're winning. And unfortunately, this time last year, well, in January last year, when the president was inaugurated, we were looking at a $50 billion trade deficit. Now, in the first 3 months of this year, this calendar year, we have reduced the deficit in those 3 months by 60%. And we're forecasting over the year, 42% reduction in that trade deficit number. And that doesn't even take into account some of these additional trade agreements that are still in the framework stage. So we're optimistic about where this is headed. Our farmers and ranchers deserve market access, and we're giving it to them.
Okay. And again, good to see the trade agreements. But at the end of the day, the proof's in the pudding, if you will. Actual sales for producers. And we're seeing that?
That's exactly right. And again, that 60% reduction number, those are real statistics. So between January, February, March of last year versus January, February, and March of this year, we are, in fact, 60% lower deficit than we were this time last year. And it's a ramp up in exports all around the world. In fact, in the 250 beautiful years that the United States of America has existed, the two best exporting months in our nation's history were January and February of this year. Say it again. In the 250 years of American history, the two best exporting months were January and February of this year ever. And that's across the board, not just in agriculture. And so the president is aggressively opening up these access opportunities, and we're taking full advantage of them.
You know, I think, again, we consider, flash sales, saw it today, of corn, Mexico, and unknown destinations. We see soy meal in there. We think of the raw products, but can we also think maybe more on like the biofuel side and the ethanol side? Does that count as well?
It certainly does. Yeah, I think ethanol has been a big winner this past year, and we've set the groundwork for it to continue to be a big winner. You know, our second largest export market for ethanol coming in was the United Kingdom, and we've seen a 50% increase in U.S. exports of ethanol to the United Kingdom. I was on the phone last week with President Arevalo from Guatemala, who is implementing an E10 blend mandate down there. I led a trade mission there just a few months ago, and we've developed a relationship where we're working to position U.S. ethanol in that market very successfully. We will have also seen big gains and opportunities in places like Vietnam, I think Taiwan on the horizon. It's a bright spot where many foreign buyers are wanting to meet their sustainability goals, but also see reductions at the price for their consumers. And U.S. ethanol is best positioned to help them achieve those goals.
So glad you mentioned Guatemala. I was actually in Guatemala City 2 years ago when some of the work was going into this, trying to get us to this point today, and using groups like the U.S. Grains and Bioproducts Council. How important is the work that's done with USDA through these other groups?
It's critical. In fact, I think the one thing that differentiates much of U.S. agriculture from a lot of the rest of the world is that our decisions, our strategy is really farmer-driven. All of these organizations we work with, like the U.S. Grains and Bioproducts Council and the U.S. Meat Export Federation, the U.S. Dairy Export Council, these are all driven by their farmer board members who are helping us to tell the story of why their products are the highest quality, most reliable, most nutritious products in the world. And they show up with us. So when I was down in Guatemala leading one of our rapid response Trump missions there on the heels of the president signing a historic agreement there, we had a whole cast of characters with us, and it wasn't just the folks working at the associations. It was real farmers stepping up to say, hey, I want to go represent my industry and get down into this market where we have new access and make sure we are turning these trade agreements into real sales. The slogan we're using in the Foreign Ag Service in 2026 is turning market access into market share, and a big part of that is working with these groups.
Finally here, I know you've been traveling throughout the Midwest, meeting with ag industry leaders. I believe National Restaurant Association show at the historic Chicago Board of Trade building. And what an amazing place in the history that was there and the work that was done down in the pits. But as we kind of wrap up, how important is it to meet with other groups like that?
Critically important. In fact, the National Restaurant Association show was a great showcase of all that American agriculture is and can be. The National Association of State Departments of Agriculture hosts a Taste of the States Pavilion, where some of our most innovative food companies come and showcase their products from states all across the country. Many of the state agricultural secretaries or commissioners or directors, however they're referred to in their states, were there present representing their wonderful food companies to over 150 agribusiness buying companies we brought in from overseas. So folks that want to buy American products, we brought in over 150 businesses like that to walk the halls, the pavilion, to taste the food that's produced here, to see how they can incorporate it into their local cuisines. It was just a tremendous opportunity, and a big shout out to my predecessor, Ted McKinney, and his whole team at the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture for facilitating that kind of an opportunity.
Well, thanks for the update. Thanks for the work you do. Can't wait to hear another update. Come back and see us soon.
I will do that, Tony. Thanks so much for having me on.
Again, it's the Honorable Luke Lindbergh, USDA's Trade Undersecretary. I'm Tony St. James. This is the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members, or strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
It's the Agribusiness Report. We've been talking exports. How about we talk about the number one ag export from California? Almonds. Terrain specialty crop analyst is Dr. Matt Wolf.
Following an exceptionally strong decade, the almond industry saw a convergence of challenges in the early 2020s. As the industry now moves towards greater stability, this is a natural moment to take stock of its strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. While recent stress highlighted real vulnerabilities, including export dependence and groundwater limits, it did not erase the structural strengths that supported decades of growth. While many risks cannot be identified before their impacts are felt, proactively hedging against known risks helps support long-term economic sustainability. Additionally, growers and handlers evaluating these dynamics or exploring specific opportunities should talk with their farm credit lender as they navigate what comes next for their operation. Periods of transition invite reflection. The almond industry is emerging from a period of below break-even pricing to one where prices are at or just above break-even. While current economics remain much weaker than the conditions that defined the 2010s, today's environment is meaningfully more stable than in 2022 or 2023. After several years of widespread orchard removals, some growers are now even considering whether replanting makes sense. As the industry moves from a pronounced supply-demand imbalance toward greater stability, this is a natural moment to take stock of what drove past success, where constraints have emerged, and how present conditions may shape what lies ahead. Now onto the report. A SWOT framework, which looks at the strengths, weaknesses, and opportunities, provides a useful lens for organizing that discussion, focusing on the key forces that have influenced how the industry arrived here and where it may be headed. Strengths reinforce the advantages the California industry has over global competitors and what we should not lose sight of. Changes to the industry should not diminish these strengths. The last decade's shocks to the supply chain highlighted the weaknesses, areas that can be improved to reduce or mitigate risk. Opportunities highlight that there are still areas for growth and not just stabilization, while threats examine new developing risks. These new brewing risks can be either mitigated or turned into opportunities.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Again, our guest today, the Honorable Luke Lindbergh, Undersecretary for Trade at USDA. It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
For the 2026 Atlantic hurricane season issued Thursday.
NOAA is predicting a below normal season with roughly a 55% chance of being below normal. This equates to 8 to 14 named storms with winds at or above 39 miles an hour. Of these, 3 to 6 hurricanes with winds at or above 74 miles an hour. And 1 to 3 major hurricanes, that's your category 3 to 5, with winds at or above 111 miles an hour.
Administrator Neil Jacobs of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration explains the factors behind the forecast.
It's largely an El Nino event. There's a 98% chance of El Nino conditions occurring later this season, and an 80% chance that this El Nino will be moderate to strong. In the Atlantic, the El Nino increases the vertical wind shear, which disrupts the outflow at higher levels, makes it harder for development of the eastern waves coming off of Africa to strengthen into storms.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.
It's the Agribusiness Report.